podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
It is the Anfield Wrap. After Liverpool did the decent thing against Brentford, a comfortable 3-0 home victory. I am joined by Rob Gutman, Ian Salmon and Mike Kearney to go through that, to look at Brentford, to look at the wider picture, and Arsenal to come as well. But Rob, the first thing you've got to say about Liverpool 3, Brentford 0 is it's a game that becomes almost completely defined by its opening goal. It was the 12th attempt Liverpool had had in the first half, and none really from open play, where they pulled Brentford this way or that, but the set pieces were getting closer and closer. Virgil van Dijk was blocked earlier on, Matip has a good one. Finally, Fabinho does make it 1-0 on the stroke of half-time, and it really is the key moment of the whole match.
Yes, Thomas Frank in his post-match said he spoke to Jurgen afterwards, and he said, I wonder what that game would have been like if we'd got to half-time 0-0. And I think it's a very fair point. I was with you. We were frustrated onlookers in that first half. Liverpool were playing okay football, but it definitely wasn't penetrative enough. You could take glimpses of comfort from the fact that we were much better on set pieces than we had been on Thursday against Arsenal, where we'd been disastrous on set pieces, and it being that bit better on set pieces. And I think they probably did have a little work on them, because you're going to have to against low blocks. And we got the low block we expected to face. We were better, and it led to the goal. So it's not a fluke. It's not a coincidence. Yep. So that's the way the breakthrough happens. Having said that, it's not easy to score from set pieces. And had we not, who knows what sort of a game it would be.
What's interesting, Ian, about the set piece is that the one that Virgil ends up having the shot from, the ball goes deep and comes back into that area. Matip back post, and then yeah. Fabinho is there at the back post as well. The issue with the set pieces against Arsenal was everything was trying to be near post, and everything was just being dealt with by the first man, which was hugely frustrating. As Rob says, it does suggest that they might not have had time to work on a lot in the gap between Arsenal and Brentford, but it does not look like they've worked on that.
Massively. I mean, one of the issues, it looked like it was going to happen again at the beginning of the first half. We were hitting the first man with everything we did again. I think it was about two or three different occasions we actually did it, and it looked like it was just going to be recurring. But we basically had the joy of there being a much better version of Trent. Trent midweek looked absolutely exhausted. In this game, he grew into it. He looked like he was completely back on form again. I thought we started off extremely sluggishly. I thought the first 5 minutes, we basically gave Brentford license to play bare football in front of us. From there, we kind of got back into it. Thought we played a lot of football around them, mostly in the middle of the park, but didn't look like we were ever going to penetrate. So the joy of getting that goal exactly on the stroke of half time, and in the way we did it, which is, it's a cracking header from Fabinho.
It really is.
It's the fact that
it's only a sliver of net
back.
He can put it in, isn't it? Know what I mean?
He's got about literally the width of the ball to put the ball into the net. And
you hear what Klopp said about it? He daggers, just hit him and win him.
Shut up, Jürgen.
It's a bit unfair, isn't it?
Fabinho's a back post master, as we now know.
We do, and if I was Fabinho, I'd be going in having conversations about that one this morning. He is literally being dragged back by a defender as he heads it as well.
Is he?
So, he's being held, he's being pulled back, and he kind of gets his head over the defender's shoulder to put into the back of the net. So it's really good piece of play. And obviously, the shape's been worked on, the dead ball's been worked on, but that individual persistence to actually get to the ball is brilliant.
After that, they have one real half-decent chance of an equaliser, Mike. For me, what's most promising, the Mbeumo chance, he spurns it. And then Liverpool then go up a gear. and they begin to create a number of opportunities. There's a couple of Jota ones, one one-on-one, the other one where he hits the post. Finally, Chamberlain gets in. But for me, what's this? It reminds me a little bit of, we've been pining a little bit recently for the machine-like 1920 Liverpool, and that's what I think you actually got a little bit of there. The idea of, okay, you've had your chance now, and now we're just going to put the game to bed in front of your very eyes.
Something we've been crying out for, isn't it, this season, to learn from mistakes going right the way back to the first game at Brentford, really, where we sort of encouraged them into the game, really, and nudged them along to get into it, make it a fight and get in. And, you know, there's only so much that we can do that before they actually take advantage of it. And I think what we would have all loved to have seen from the get-go, really, this season is exactly what we saw yesterday, when they do have that chance, and it's a good chance. Probably coming to them a little bit where they didn't expect it to, but, you know, when they get it, they must take it. They don't, and then we just switch in. Right, that's it. Now, that's, as you said, that's your chance gone. You should have took it. What a waste. And then we've thankfully just stayed very calm and just done what we've been saying with Klopp, haven't we, for years and years now. And these players know patterns like the back of their hands. And even though the Thursday thing happened, and it's frustrating, it's just a different feel altogether yesterday, I thought. Even though, you know, as Ian says, we don't start out the traps, really. We sort of grow into the game. And, you know, the fact that when Brentford do get the chance and they don't take it, it's not just a case of, well, oh, you've had one. Let's get a bit panicky. It's now, put that out of your mind now and let's just go again.
It's all a little bit more typical, Rob. It's more typical of the way football matches at home, Liverpool, against sides like, for instance, Brentford, are meant to go. You know, if it all had, even the time of the goals feels sort of about right. It was about as run-of-the-mill as it can get, is my point. And I mean that as a huge compliment to Liverpool. We're crying out for a little bit more run-of-the-mill. I think that's, you know, I think we've shown we can do the exceptional. We've shown we can be bounced into classic games, in inverted commas. We've shown we can live in classic games, in inverted commas. But we just need, from now until, you know, maybe even all the way till, but the Champions League comes back or even beyond, just a bit more normality. And that was the nature of what we mean by normality.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember the context of the month we've had coming into this game. Confidence isn't high at the moment, and we've lost arguably our two best defensive players. And we came out of a game on Thursday where we'd look totally impotent from an attacking sense. Our confidence had only really been further dented. Self-doubt had only grown, I would say. So, yes, the goal before half-time is a fillip, but I felt the way that second half was going to go, I think I said it to you at half-time, I think it's going to be a nervy second half. This, you know, we'd got a goal. They wouldn't say against the run of play, but they'd have got into that dressing room, as Thomas Frank sort of indicated, feeling a bit harshly done by. They defended well. He said afterwards he thought we'd played really, really well for 60 minutes. I think they'd have been particularly pleased how well they played for 44 minutes. So they'd done okay. Yeah. They built this bridgehead. We got a goal which they could have characterised as a bit spawny, and I expected them to be... We know what Brentford look like when they're good. They can be a handful, and they're a self-motivated bunch, and I think the greatest tribute to a second half is not that we got our mojo back in terms of opening them up, which we definitely did, but we got our mojo back in terms of our sense of how to dominate another football team. We remembered who we were. We thought, hang on, Brentford, you don't just get to decide that it's your turn now. It's still our turn. You're still a shit team at Anfield, and you will stay pinned back. And that's what happened.
Just on that, I'll come back to you actually on it, Rob. For me, I thought it was interesting, Jones and Henderson. Recently, Liverpool's midfielders have come for a little bit of criticism. I felt we were a bit back to basics in terms of the fact that Jones and Henderson exist solely to serve the other footballers, the fullbacks, the forwards. You know, I can't really remember. This isn't a criticism, and some people would use it as a criticism. I can't remember either of them being intimately involved in an attacking period of play. And I watched the game back this morning in full, and I couldn't. You know, there's no moment where, for instance, they're making something happen or anything like that. But it looked to me like, well, that wasn't their job. It was very Wijnaldum, Henderson, Milner, Fabinho. That sort of ilk, where you've got three attackers, you've got these lads there, we're going to get set pieces, we're going to make it all a bit horrible for you, but you're not getting any change out of Liverpool. And it's interesting that the Mbeumo chance, for instance, comes from a very rare Curtis Jones error. Apart from that, he was just keeping things ticking, and so was Henderson, in a really mundane way.
Yeah, they were very understated, you know, near a sort of that number between 6 and 8, which we can't call the 7.
Yeah.
If anything, and I know we're going to talk about it, the fullbacks were playing the 8 role, especially Trent.
Yeah.
So they were filling those gaps because I thought, I mean, Curtis has been quite dominant in his sub appearance against Arsenal and against Shrewsbury. So, and I know he'd had a chat with Klopp in the week, as Klopp spoke about it. They had a long talk. He wants Curtis to push on. And I thought we might see Curtis being charged with being the playmaker, but he wasn't. He was evidently
told, quite the opposite, I felt.
Yeah, exactly. He was told to keep it nice and simple. I mean, there's only one real example of him actually sort of coming out of his shell, if you like, in the second half, where he checks in on the right, dribbles past a couple of lads and gets a good half decent shot away. I mean, personally, I want Curtis Jones as close to goal as possible because I think he's incredibly talented. I think in any part of the pitch he can beat a man and get a shot away. But notwithstanding that, you're right, he did. Him and Henderson were mirror images of each other in that sort of 6.5 3/4 kind of
very role. Wide as well at times, and creating that platform.
Yeah, they were giving cover to the fullbacks, really, weren't they, to an extent?
It's interesting to me, Ian, because the structure of Liverpool's attack, and I'll say it again, it seems a bit more conventional Liverpool from a couple of years ago. It didn't look like anyone was trying to do anything sort of markedly different. I also thought Chamberlain helped with that massively. The ins and outs of his performance is interesting, but he just offered that pacey ball on the right. I thought Jota looked so much happier on the left, yeah. And I'm not surprised he gets the couple of chances. The structure of the attack just made much, much, much more sense.
Well, we had bounce all across the field, I think. And I think just to go back to Jones for a second, because that run and the shot he gets off, if that's Phil Foden, match of the day, do half an hour on that run, because that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And he kept the ball with that kind of... that tenacity, that movement, and he was linking up on the left-hand side high up with Robertson. So he was actually doing a lot of progressive stuff, but within himself. But that run's fantastic. But the fact that we had, and especially through the second half, Henderson pulling out to the right and doing what Harvey Elliott was doing at the beginning of the season, giving Trent the chance to go inside and basically play as a midfielder. But that we kind of had Jota going more central from the left, which is Jota was lost midweek. Jota was a passenger playing in completely the wrong position. And the fact of Chamberlain being on the right, a couple of instances early in the first half where his touch wasn't right and there were easy balls. There's that shot in the second half where it comes high over him. He just lashes it first time when it could have just been a case of take it, put it down on the floor, stick it in the middle of the box because Firmino's there. So there's those things, but he kept coming back every single time. So the bits that didn't work weren't affecting him. And he gave the option of that little bit of speed, that little bit of breaking the lines all the time. It's what he always gives us. And you know, hopefully the knock he's got is a very, very minor knock and he'll be ready for midweek.
It's for me, it's interesting, Mike, and yesterday I think was an example of it where... you can end up driving yourself mad with the idea of whether or not someone's playing brilliantly or not at times, in that if everyone is being functional in a Liverpool side at home to Brentford, then Liverpool should beat Brentford. And that is, I think that's something that's been lost a little bit this season. There's been so many stellar performances from Liverpool players at times, but then there's been other moments where, for any one of a variety of reasons, people have had stinkers. For me, Chamberlain's a really interesting conversation in this, in that it isn't even particularly about what he does well or what he does badly, it's that he's there. And then obviously what helps is the most functional thing he can do playing in that position, Salah's position, is score the Salah-like goal, at which point you get to go, well, this worked. It had to have worked. There it is. That's what it looks like when it works.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word you use, functional, is probably bang on, really. It's not being 10 out of 10. You don't have to be. If you just do what you've been told to do and what you know is going to affect them in the way it does, it pays off in the end, because we hear Robertson, don't we, after the game, come out and say, Ox had been saying to him, I want it there, put it there, put it early. And that's where I'll be. And you know, it's a dive and header. It's a great goal, to be honest. It's a lovely
goal. It's a really good goal, yeah.
I mean, the ball is incredible.
Yeah, it's really well worked. And you know, it's one of them balls where if he doesn't do the dive and header, you're thinking to yourself, where's someone just gambling?
Yeah.
And he's absolutely gambled on it, because he knows, he's, you know, I've had space there. He must have seen it about 4 or 5 times to be able to go to his mate at half time and go, just put it there and I'll be there. And that's the thing about being functional, isn't it? He knows that's going to work, so he keeps doing it. He's always a threat, as you say. He's the one that's making the Brentford defenders think. And they, you know, they could really be in a team where they come with the five at the back, and it could really be a problem. Rico Henry's not an awful player. He's actually really decent. I know he's had a couple of injuries over the last couple of weeks, and it might have been a bit of a, you know, a tougher game for him, maybe you'd say, if Salah was playing, but Chamberlain has occupied him and he knows he's got the run on him at the back post, and as we say, that's where the goal comes from. And just the fact that we've got this functionality back and it seems to be working means that everything else sort of falls into place. We've got Firmino then having lots of space, and without him being incredible again, he was very functional and he linked up really well with Jota when Jota was moving inside. I just thought everyone sort of did the jobs well enough to be able to give people space on the pitch, is what we've grown into essentially in that game.
Space is the key thing, as Mike's saying there, Rob, for me. You know, space is, that's what was missing in the game against Arsenal. Unless we know that they go down to 10. But for me, it is if you're making the pitch big on the right, then there's going to be space, therefore, to fill for Jota and for me, you know, through the left and the middle. And that was as simple as that. And it's a strange thing, you know, this isn't, in the end, he gets a goal and, you know, he's a footballer who I think looks like a good footballer in Minamino. But because he isn't quick, it's as simple as that, it's so much harder for him to produce things that stretch in exactly that same way. And, you know, for me, that's what Chamberlain does over the course of the 90 minutes. And as I say, it isn't because he does anything particularly brilliant. The goal is excellent, don't get me wrong. But he just creates a situation where Brentford are really concerned all the time that this lad can run round as he can run round the back. He can do this, he can do that. And he's not going to be Salah, but it just helps everybody.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I'm going to say his performance was an understated one because I can't really recall a lot. But apart from the goal, but then I could say that about a few of them. You spot the highlights. Yep. But that speaks to it being a team performance second half. The spaces were there second half. And it was almost a couple of reasons for it, I think. But it was a salutary reminder to me of games I've watched at Anfield since I was a child, where sometimes it can look incredibly congested in the first half against a team that is playing against a Liverpool side and wants to frustrate. And then suddenly it's a different game second half because there's space everywhere. And that is a lot of a factor of simple tiredness.
Yep.
All defences tire who've had to focus on mainly defending in a second half. So that definitely happens. I think Liverpool definitely moved the ball quicker second half. There was a lot of side-to-side in that first half. Echoes of January, February last season, which absolutely killed all of us, when the ball would be pushed into Andy Robertson, the space would be closed down in front of him, back into the centre half, and back and forth across the line. We were seeing shades of that in the first half. You were with me, and I was screaming at Trent to get wide. The width issue was sorted out, as you're describing, with Chamberlain a bit more in the second half. But we definitely were moving the ball quicker in midfield. I think Klopp would say we were being braver as well.
Absolutely.
And braveness comes with confidence, and the confidence came from the goal.
Jota doesn't score, Ian, but he was a constant threat. It was actually a very pleasing not scoring performance in that second half, in that it's interesting to me how he grows into it. As Rob says, they begin to tire, spaces begin to open up. Cleverness, though, is the key for me. That and the fact that he just consistently perseveres.
Yeah, he's an intelligent player, isn't he? He's permanently, when he started off in the right position, he's permanently in the right place. So Thursday night, he was never in the right place. He was never where we needed him because the job he was doing wasn't the job that he's good at. Coming in from the left or occupying the left of a central area, he's going to be a threat. And that one where he hits the post, he's in the middle of about three defenders and gets the shot off. It's what we know he can do. I think if he hadn't been subbed, and he needed to be subbed because obviously we need him again for the next game. But if he hadn't been
subbed... And the game after
and probably several more for the rest of the season. But if he hadn't been subbed, he'd have scored because it was coming. It was inevitable. He's one of those players who, when you see that he's actually getting the range, the goal becomes inevitable. And we know exactly what he can do. I think he's probably the most underrated forward in the league at the moment because people don't talk about him enough. But he gets shots off as a snapshot very, very quickly. And I thought, again, he was excellent. Again, a sluggish start, but he was close and well. There's always the energy there from him.
The speed of thought, Mike, is the key thing for me with Jota. In terms of when he gets his shots off, ranging his feet, it's not instinctive. I think you can end up saying that it looks instinctive because he does it all so quickly, but I think it's because he is thinking all the time. He thinks his way through these games. He's not quick, but he finds ways he can just run away from people and just get in front of them and make it difficult. And you know, I think it's an excellent second half performance. I really do. I think it's about as good as you can play without whacking one into the back of the net.
Yeah, you listen to all ex-pros, don't you? And you sort of know yourself if you've played anyway. It makes sense because they always say the first 2 or 3 yards are in your head, and he's got it. Like he just knows if I do this now, I'm in. I've got a couple of yards extra. Or as Ian mentions with the shot, he just knows. His body always seems to be in the right position. There's no fluke about it with Jota. He is always thinking. And I think, you know, there's a clip gone out last week. I think it was Chamberlain and Jota. They were commentating over the Arsenal game. from the 4-1, and he's the goal where he takes it off Tavares and then does the keeper. There's a bit where Chamberlain said, "Oh, I thought you were hitting that," and he said, "Well, I did as well." So like you can instinctively he pulled back to shoot, and then he's seen something, and at the speed of thought to go, right, I'll just walk around him and score. And he's that same, that's come from his own mouth. So like of course he's just naturally instinctive, you would say, on the pitch, but of knowing what to do when the opportunity presents itself, not necessarily just out of instinct, I'm doing this. It's, as soon as he sees the chance, he goes, right, this is what I need to do now, or this is what I can do now. Because if someone at that level, with that split seconds, really, at that goal I'm talking of there, to be able to think, I'm shooting, no, I'm not. And then just to be able to have the ability to do it without really missing a beat, that's where defenders really struggle with him. He's people say he's a poacher and that, but a poacher's got to be really, really clever, not just to be able to put it in the net, obviously, but to get the space to make the movements with everyone else around the pitch.
Do you know who reminds me of a little bit, Jota? Sound a bit mad. Robbie Fowler, in terms of the way he finishes and the way and his instincts. He gets a shot away very early. He's got every finish in the book. He doesn't look like he should be good in the air, but he is, and that's because of his positioning. If you think even his mad goals, like the one against Everton recently, and you know, in the shot he gets away against Chelsea, he can volley, he can use either foot, he can poach, he can pick shots from the edge of the box. But the common thing for me is what he does is getting that shot away early.
He strikes me, Rob, as really a bit of a throwback, to be honest with you, as a footballer, in the way often when we refer to footballers as throwbacks, it's because there's maybe something a little bit agricultural about something that they do. This is almost quite the opposite to me. Even down to, you know, you look at Mane and Salah, you watch them for any length of time, you realise how physically impressive they are. And this isn't saying I'm sure Diogo Jota is insanely fit. He absolutely will be. He wouldn't be able to play Premier League football. But the point is that you don't come away with a sense of, you know, he's lightning quick or he's this or he's that. He's almost a little bit of a wiry figure. He just sort of looks like a footballer from 20 years ago who suddenly turned up in this team and is making it work.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And he's got elements of sort of the type of midfielder as well that were in that era. You know, we often reference this, the David Platt type, who he was like a ghost at times. But actually, if you make yourself watch Diogo Jota, and just Diogo Jota, for like 10 minutes, he does more than any of those guys from that era, because he's like Firmino, he's a nick of the ball away merchant, a little bit less pretty than Firmino, who will cutely drag the ball off your foot, do a little swivel, and then put somebody in. But he's biting your heels a lot, Diogo Jota. I mean, Linda said in their scouting of him, they noted he was a pressing monster. He's not obviously an aggressive pressing monster, but he is like a waspish, buzzing pressing monster around people, and he puts you back in possession very, very quickly. That's the best of his off the ball. He's very, very strong off the ball. It's that simple.
Yeah. For me, Ian, what was interesting about the game, in the end, for me, you know, through pressing, does brilliantly in order to create the third, and I think that you got to see a confident Roberto Firmino there in terms of the fact that he chooses to find Minamino when he could take it on himself. But for me, what was most interesting about the game in the end was Matip van Dijk, Fabinho and Jones and Henderson, but I want to focus on Matip van Dijk, Fabinho. They all play the first game against Brentford, where there was a lot of big balls, there was a lot of them getting turned around, there was a lot of Liverpool not looking as though they were in control of it. To me, it just looked like Liverpool had learned. They'd learned an awful lot from that first game against Brentford. I do think this might happen a bit to Brentford in the second half of the season. You can watch all the videos you want, but the reality of playing against a team is the best way to educate yourself about what they're about, and I thought that the three of them just marshalled the game excellently.
Completely. I mean, you can't remain a surprise all the time, can you? Once you've been seen, once you've been experienced, you're no longer a surprise. I thought Fabinho was excellent throughout the first half, because he's basically holding the midfield. He was sweeping up everything that came back and that got past him. Matip, I thought the entire game was utterly outstanding, apart from the one moment where he gives the ball away. But he has everything, and he gets better and better through the game because he knows he's in charge of it. He knows no one's getting past him. So we finally get the Joel Matip run that results in a shot. Next, with the next step, we're one step away from at the back of the net, this one. This is finally going to happen at some point in the season. But he's just imperious. He's winning everything. I mean, you can argue, and I know one of the lads next to me was arguing that Ivan Toney has kind of faded from those first few weeks of the season. And again, you can't be a surprise for the...
And is that COVID? Genuinely, is that COVID?
He has that COVID, yeah. And we don't know what the long-term effects of it are at all. But he marshalled him brilliantly. The entire back line did the job excellently, and we never looked overly threatened. 5 minutes into the second half, after we'd, well, probably about a minute after we'd scored, they looked like they might threaten again. But there was snuffed out after that.
Matip had watched the video of his own performance against Brentford, I'm convinced of it. It was his worst performance for a couple of years, really. And he was absolutely bullied by Tony, and it just wasn't going to happen to him again. In fact, he decided... Tony made himself the story of that first game. Matip made himself the story. He didn't just defend him better. He made Tony have to think about what was happening the other way. And, you know, those, we've got to work on what those Matip dribbles, because they are such a potent weapon. I mean, Matip himself needs to get bold. And he said, you know what? The shot he gets away isn't that good.
No, it's tame.
It's a weak, dribbly little shot. But he actually has a better sight of goal half a yard before then, should take the shot. But he's waiting for someone to make the run for him. People have got to start making the runs for him.
But he got through about five defenders.
Oh, no, he's amazing. I want to just say one thing, because we never, ever talk about him anymore. Virgil van Dijk. Now, I think Virgil van Dijk quietly is playing really, really well. People don't want to give him the credit for playing well unless they see him chasing down a forward and putting a boot in. They want to give people, are rushing to give him, saying, he wasn't that good, van Dijk, today, when we concede any kind of goal. It's always slightly Virgil's fault. I've been watching him closely the last few games. His housekeeping, like a great goalkeeper, has just been immaculate. Just his touch on the ball, his positioning, his calmness, and also quietly yesterday, the spraying of the ball around like a quarterback, like vintage Alonso, it was awesome at times. But people are just so used to it. And I think it's also, I don't have to say Van Dijk played well, do I? But he's he's still probably, he would say himself, coming back from that injury and not at his peak. And he's just had bloody COVID.
But that's possibly a reinvention post-injury as well, because it's a serious injury, so you've got to play within yourself to an extent. So reinvent your game to make sure you're covering yourself.
Yeah.
But there's also going to be amongst those criticising confirmation bias.
Yeah.
He wasn't great today. There you go, told you he couldn't come back from an injury like that.
True that.
There's an element with Virgil, I'm glad Rob's touched on it, Mike, where, and I like the notion of housekeeper and to not use a quarterback analogy, but almost like an opening batsman in cricket, around the fact that everything's tidy and it's done with a minimum of fuss, and he's not going to get trapped. And that, to me, is one of the things I took from the game yesterday. When there's the opportunity to play the big ball, he'll play the big ball. But apart from that, everything's just simply about, no one's getting hurt here. We're all coming through the other side of this. And that's what I think we need from him, from not just for this little run of games now, but from now until the end of the campaign. I think Liverpool do need to defend with a lot more of a minimum of fuss. There's been too much active defending from Liverpool. We need more of, we just got through that game and they barely hurt us.
Yeah, and that's right down to the fact that he just does everything that needs doing when it needs doing, sort of thing, without, as you said, minimum of fuss. And, you know, I'm sure the kit man doesn't even need to wash Virgil's kit shirt yesterday there. He could have swapped it. It probably would have smelled lovely still. He's imperious, isn't he, really? And, you know, there was a long time in his career before he came to Liverpool, obviously, where he's done all the learning and stuff. But even when he's come to Liverpool, it seems like he's gone on another level, really. Like, he wasn't playing this good for teams gone by. You know, he's working with, you know, a superb goalkeeper behind him, which gives him just the confidence to be able to do whatever. And, I mean, we talk about mistakes that they've made as individuals or combined, maybe. You can count them on one hand. Which is the real litmus test of what genuine world class defenders are. And as you know, Ian was saying there, the passing is, to be honest, it's probably one of our better attacking tools.
Yeah.
And there's lots of goals we've scored from. I remember going back to the Bayern Munich game in the Champions League a couple of years ago. Great ball for Sadio's.
It's why it matters, though, isn't it, Mike, that he's got the option to go back to the idea of making the pitch big and having the option. Why it matters, for instance, that whoever's playing wide right is able to hang out there and have pace. So he's got someone to hit. So it isn't this idea of, you know, he's trying to go out there, but everyone just wants to tuck in. There needs to be the options, doesn't there, out there, because it's part of how Liverpool stretch the game.
Yeah, and, you know, that's probably, you go back to Thursday, the option wasn't there really, or wasn't really on. So we sort of lose that on Thursday, but it's there again at the weekend. Whenever we need it, he's got it, and you know he's got it in his locker. If you go to Brentford forwards there, if you're Thomas Frank, you're probably saying, look, this is a weapon for them attacking wise. We shouldn't just drop off and let them have the ball. And even, you know, people have sort of started letting Matip have more of the ball, haven't they? Which is bizarre, because his passing's got better and better, you know, and then runs.
Yeah.
As well, you can't really let a Liverpool player have the ball. Really, we've got really good attacking fullbacks who can, you know, seeing the deliveries yesterday. There's a couple where there's a bit disappointing, but, you know, eight times out of ten in the game, you're going to have something with real quality coming in from the flanks. You've got Van Dijk, who can knock it long, who can go short. You know, he's got sort of the range of passing that you'd expect really, really brilliant centre mids to have. and then you've got Matip who can do the short passes quickly up the pitch and run it up. There's options all over the place, and the fact that we've got centre halves who aren't just boot it and get back in position merchants. We can literally play football every single position in the team, and you would be surprised at Alisson Becker as well, who can ping a 40-yard ball whenever he wants.
It is a midfield masterclass from the two centre-halves, if you think about it. If you faded everyone else out of the picture and go, watch the performance of these two, and you couldn't see any other players on the pitch, you go, that's two centre-mids, two deep-lying centre-mids running a game. That's what they were doing. We talked about retro football. That's kind of how Souness would have played like, might have played like Van Dijk, and one of our other sort of midfielders might have played like Matip. They were purely midfield players there. But I thought it was an interesting example. Let's not gloss over this, because we're being positive. It was not a vintage Liverpool performance.
Far from it. Albeit
that it had a really good 20 minutes where we seized out. We saw our chance and seized it and took the game away from. That's totally praiseworthy. But generally, it wasn't a great Liverpool performance. But what it was a nice example of is how this Liverpool setup finds ways, looks for different kinds of solutions. So with other players, we haven't got the sharpest forwards on the pitch. When things are very compact, other players step up, other solutions are found. And I think we found it through our centre halves, we found it through our set pieces.
But just on that, Rob, for instance, City went to Brentford recently and they got a 1-0, and no one came away from that. They didn't even create very much, but they got 1-0 up and they just kept Brentford at arm's length. No one came away from that, again, saying it's a vintage Manchester City performance.
No.
It's been a vintage game involving Manchester City. There have been very few of them over the course of this campaign. The intense game they have at the weekend there against Chelsea is one of very little goal-mouth action. When we played Chelsea recently, there was a cavalcade of goal-mouth action. For me, that's what I'm sort of coming away from this game. In hindsight, the further the distance gets away from it, more pleased by it. Not because I think Liverpool were great, but because I think Liverpool just looked like the sort of side that comes first or second in the league, if you sort of know what I mean. And that's been a little bit of what's been missing this season, in amongst moments of absolute excellence and brilliance from this Liverpool team.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all said, if we were being honest with ourselves before that game, take any kind of victory. I think in the previews I was involved with, and sure you agreed with me, I said, this is not a day to expect Liverpool to cut loose or to even play well at all. Any kind of ground out 1-0 will do. And it was a ground out 3-0, really, ultimately. And not that they flattered us, but it was ground out. And we do have to do that more. There's no doubt about it.
Just on that, Ian, for me, it's now back-to-back clean sheets. You can say what you want about the Arsenal game and how they attacked or didn't attack, but it's back-to-back clean sheets. And if they get two more in the next two, they'll probably be in a final. And they'll have probably taken 3 points from Crystal Palace. Yep. It's what they need a little bit more of for me. And so that's why I wanted to focus on Matip, on Van Dijk, on Fabinho, Alisson, if he has something to do, but that's significant. For me, this is the job for the next couple of games. It's the job, that they need to be focused on a teeny little bit more when Mane and Salah come back anyway. The job from now until the end of the season, from a Liverpool point of view for me, is just keep keeping clean sheets. Keep keeping clean sheets and we'll see where we are.
Yeah, the job is to be good enough. Yes, it wasn't great. It wasn't great football, but it was good enough. We were as good as we needed to be. And there have been times this season when we haven't. Brentford the first game, Brighton at home, West Ham away, we weren't good enough in those games. And if we had been, if we'd been as good as we needed to be, we would be, 3 points behind City with a game in hand. And the league would look very much more on than it is at the moment. So that is the job for the rest of the season, to be as good as we need to be in every single game. As you said, if we don't concede in the next two games, then yeah, we're in the League Cup final. And we've won another league game, which puts us close to City. And we're still waiting on people taking points from them, which doesn't look very likely at the moment, because Saturday lunchtime was the one that you thought would have happened and almost did for about 60 minutes. Are we going to come on to Chelsea City in a minute?
Well, yeah. The world handed City the title by 2 p.m. on Saturday, didn't they? And it's sort of, if you want to... Liverpool were being handed the title on December the 19th after beating Palace 7-0, and Guardiola all but conceded. I think the gap was 11 with City to play that afternoon and with another game in hand. But with 11 points, and City were going away to Southampton, I think, that day, and Guardiola, they weren't in good form at all. We were rubbing our hands. 11 points is 11 points. Forget the games in hand. They quietly won that afternoon. I sat there watching it, wanting them to drop points because they looked like they could drop points. They didn't play well at all, but they got their win. They got their win and they made it 8 with a game in hand, and we wobbled and they ground and then they hit their stripes. course, City are likely to win this title, but it's far from gone. And yesterday was so important, with that gap opening to what it was opening to, that we got that win. And it is so important that we beat Palace. Liverpool are in a run now of, if Leeds gets rescheduled in the next month or so, of that was the first of an 8-game stretch of very, very beatable teams, all below 8th in the table.
I think so, yeah.
You noted Neil Sadler. Now, I'm not going to say Liverpool are going to win 8 on the bounce, but they're 8 winnables on the bounce, and only one more of them without our 2 main attacking forwards. Opportunity is here for Liverpool to stay very much in this race, rebuild form, and let's see where we are by the time we go to the Etihad on April the 8th.
Yeah, it's not case of saying we are going to win 8 on the bounce, but we can win 8 on the bounce. Yes. City just won 12 on the bounce.
But the way City winning those 12 on the bounce, and this is my point, is the thing that's most important to City winning 12 on the bounce is that they spend a lot of time in control of those games and they're just not conceding many goals.
Yeah.
And that for me is... That's the job. That is the job now. And I think that, you know, there's lots of other aspects of the job, but that I feel as though I can rely on when he's back, Mo Salah. I feel as though we've forgotten that we can actually rely a little bit on Sadio Mane.
I think there's other footballers.
There's other footballers around who, you know, we can rely upon, but what we can't rely upon them to do is constantly pull rabbits out of hats. The more Liverpool are keeping clean sheets, the more boring Liverpool are. I want a boring run from Liverpool where there's not a classic game, there's not a great performance, there's not even the need for a last-minute winner. There's Liverpool 2-0. There's a lot of Liverpool either finishing games 2-0 or being 2-0 up in games for long stretches. Ooh. That's what we need.
Yeah, I'd love a lot of dull 2-0s. I mean, it'd be very useful if other teams showed the cowardice that Chelsea showed against City on Saturday when they play us. Chelsea play us, they go toe-to-toe, they decide to actually battle the whole thing out. Against City, they don't try it. They leave Ziyech on the pitch for like half an hour longer than he should have been on the pitch. They don't use Mason Mount. There's a degree of absolute bottle merchants in that game, and they could have actually imposed themselves on the game, but they chose not to because they were scared. So I'd like to see some of that against us because we're actually quite good at...
They've got a Lukaku-sized problem, by the way.
They have, yeah.
He's shit. He's massively out of form and confidence. He's out of form and confidence. He seems to have rediscovered the Premier League Lukaku of the Man U era.
I think he just needs a strike partner. I think they bought a player who needs to play with two up front. You look at him at Inter Milan and he's got the lad next to him up front and he looks brilliant. It's a weird signing in the context of if you're not gonna build around him, if you're gonna just keep doing the same thing over and over and leave him distant, that's the problem.
Yeah, I don't think he's well tonight the weekend. He sort of singles him out saying there's no shot on target. Well, I mean, that's half down to your fault because you set up to play the way you did, didn't really get the best out of your forward line, and you probably should be looking more at yourself. Yeah, okay, it wasn't great, and I think he has a chance, does he? I didn't really watch the game, I just seen bits of it, but he had a good enough chance, presentable one, and you'd want better, wouldn't you? But again, it's not just all down to, you know, you see Klopp and other managers saying, well, that's my fault, that in circumstances like that where Tuchel's come out and probably, I don't know why, really, because it's the whole story thing with Lukaku at the minute as well. Dropping him for the FA Cup game against us. Sorry, not the FA Cup, the league game. It just feels like you're not helping yourself, really. You need to just find a way to make it not news. The news should be he scores goals. And
very much so.
They just need to do that. And, you know, they're none of our business really anymore because we're back above them in the league, aren't we? But
that's the key thing, Ian, is that we need them to actually cease to be our business. We can keep looking upwards and we should keep looking upwards, but we're a certain thing we can do if we do go on the sort of run that we need to go on is we'll very quickly now make them no longer our concern. And I think that's important. I think we could do with... I'd like clear blue water. I'd like it to be it's Manchester City and Liverpool. I don't want it to... I want no more of this. Can Liverpool or Chelsea catch Manchester City? What we need to do is turn this into... Now, it is Manchester City versus Liverpool. And yes, City have got the head start, but Liverpool are not letting go.
Yeah, our only concern at the moment should be City. Our only concern is what's in front of us. Chelsea, they can spend the rest of the season doing what they did Saturday lunchtime for me now. They're not an issue to be thought about anymore. They're not going to be an opportunity to take points off anybody. We need them to take our points off. So
we don't play them again.
They're nothing to us now. Just let them fall back the way we thought they were mid-December when it was just obviously ourselves and City involved and Chelsea looked way in the distance. We need to be in that position again and we need to just keep pushing forward. Our job is the same as it always is. Just go out, win the next game, see where we are.
Arsenal then is the next game. Obviously, Palace is on the horizon as well, and I think it's a little bit tricky for the manager in a sense, Robin, that there's some of our support who'll be listening to this and thinking, why are you even bothering thinking about City? There's no way back. The manager and these players do not have the luxury of that. The more important game of the next two for them will remain Crystal Palace. And I think we need to be really open about that. Like that in their minds, whether they're right or wrong, the nature of the footballers they are, what they've done in the past and what they'll think they can do in the future. For them, the more important game will be Crystal Palace. So with that in mind, you know, what do you think the team and the approach will be at Arsenal? I still think Liverpool will go very strong indeed. I think the manager will be thinking, you know, we want to make sure we, now that we've hit the semi-finals of this competition, we want to go all the way. But I think it's just important to reflect on that, that for them, they will be thinking, we fight for this league title until the very, very last moment. Arsenal away will be a game they want to win. They want to win every game. But their clarity of thought, I think, will still be Palace matters more.
I think the manager will, and I agree with you, the squad would go, if I can only win or come out on top in one of those two games, let's go with the league one. I know there's a cup final at stake, but let's just go with the league one, because that win against Palace would, I mean, apart from the fact it would give us the points we need, it would help us build the momentum, and it would open the path up ahead for us for the winning stretch we need. So it's vital we do that. Having said that, and I think sort of if we've been playing two games a week now for the past 6 weeks, I think the manager would pick his Palace team first and then worry about his Arsenal team. But we haven't been playing two games a week for the past 6 weeks. I think there's a lot of footballers, Klopp's referenced it in a few interviews, he wants people in rhythm.
Yeah.
And I think there's a part of me that say, I like the way the team that's not quite finished again, the best of the second half I saw against Brentford, I quite like to put that out against Arsenal and again against Palace. And I don't really think I have to do much freshening up, because after that they got a week or two off, if I'm right, at the moment with this winter break or whatever, having said that. But what does he do? I think a tweak here and there. I don't think anything changes. I think both fullbacks are likely to go again in both games. I think both centre-backs could go. Joel Matip's an ever-present risk of having played a game too many, so he could make the Konate switch at the Emirates. The rest of it, I don't know. I think he'll like the side he started with the other day. Although, of course, did he start? Yeah, no. I think he'll like the shape of the team he started with, the midfield balance. I think he'll just ask them to do more of what they did in the second half and not in the first half. So I think Arsenal, he will just put his blinkers on and goes, I want the best side I can put out against, and I'm not going to make any compromising decisions with Palace in mind, because I think the best way of beating Palace is by beating Arsenal.
I think we need the rhythm. I think when we lost the Leeds game, when that was taken out of the calendar, I think that interrupted our rhythm, because the team that played next hadn't played for 9 days.
Yeah.
So we need that rhythm again just to find ourselves. And you could see that rhythm building yesterday. You could see actually the shape of the team improving as we went through the game. You could see the passing range. You could see everything actually developing in front of you to what we actually are and can be. So I think you go with as much of that as you can. And it might be a case of, you know, we don't want to risk Matip three games in another 6 days. We can't risk Oxlade-Chamberlain because the knock is a bit too serious to rush him through again. But it is Thursday, so, you know, it's quite a gap Sunday to Thursday, isn't it? So as much of yesterday's team as possible, because I think we're in the second leg of the semi-final. We might as well win it and then might as well win the cup. At which point, I think we are playing Chelsea again, aren't we?
We are, yeah. So, but don't worry about that. We might play them in Europe as well, Ian. Yeah. But we all knew you meant about the league campaign. Mike, just the question is, if Chamberlain isn't available, what should he do on the right? And it was interesting that both Minamino and Gordon get approximately the same length of time on the pitch. Minamino scores, Gordon gets a really, really good opportunity. I think it will be between those two as to which of them features if Chamberlain doesn't. Origi is meant to be close, but you get the impression he may well feature from the bench. What do you think he does?
It's tough because we've literally had evidence over the last two games that we've played of a solution to what the problem was in the first game, really. It's the threat in behind that we had with Chamberlain. If he's fit, I think he goes again. If he doesn't, I don't know. I don't know who he picks, because you need to keep it as similar as possible. I Minamino is a footballer who scores goals, but he's also not capable, I just don't think it's a skill set essentially of what he'll try and do. I mean, if we asked him to try and run in behind, he'd probably do it, but again, we sort of have the evidence from the Thursday that he wants to come in and be involved centrally, and when we've seen him play well against us for Salzburg. He wasn't out in the wing, was he? He was a part of like a very central attacking three. So I think that's just his game. I don't know whether he'd throw Gordon in from the start. I think, you know, this manager's well capable of doing it. He's done it with Elliot. Gordon's obviously been in and around the squad, this, and, you know, impressing. He's getting minutes in the Premier League as well as starting games and in cup competitions. He's very, very, very likely to get minutes, whether he'd start him. I don't know quite yet. I don't even know if there's a diddle where you could maybe do a Nico.
Yeah, I think, because I said it before, and I was wrong, but I think there's an argument for that, Mike.
Because that was really scary last time we did it.
Oh, it's just, I think it's the most similar thing we can go for.
No,
there's no
last
change.
Last time we did it was good. The time before when we did in the league.
Oh, the league. Yeah, the league.
The one thing you can say about that Arsenal game coming up is there's going to be grass in behind. Arsenal aren't going to take the game.
They need to come out as well, though. Because they've essentially got 120 minutes at home where they'll think, right, well, as long as we keep a nil, like Neil was saying before, if we keep a nil in our next few games, we're likely going to go through. And Arsenal will probably be thinking similar. Well, you know, we could keep a nil and we've got a likely chance of going through against Liverpool here. And they, but
so it's nil-nil in Paris.
But at the same time, they can't really afford to be that negative, and they need to come and try and get a goal to stretch the game, if that makes any sense. They need to stretch the game as much as possible, but they need to do it from a position where they go one up.
I think it comes from midfield. That's how you breach. You've got to have third man runners. If you don't have pace merchants as such, and we won't have any really, will we? We'll have people who are decent, quick in their mind around the box, like Jota and even Chamberlain and Minamino, but we won't have people.
Jota does get hacked down for running away from them, if you see what I mean. That's where the red card comes from. He's hacked down because he's running away. Is the thing I'd say. And there was also space. And that's the key thing, there was space.
Yeah, there was space. And I think that's what's going to come again at us, isn't it? And that's what I think they will prepare for. I think Arteta's not going to be so soft as to just go, we're at home, we throw it all out onto Liverpool. I mean, Arteta changed his tactics hugely from the 4-0 at Anfield, didn't he? There was absolutely zero playing it out from the back going on, which I was quite impressed, because I thought he seemed so addicted and so sort of, what's the word, so zealous in his desire for Arsenal to be a team that plays it from the keeper. But they didn't do it, I don't think, once. So I don't think they'll allow us to do that again. I think what we have to be prepared for is Arsenal will try and summon the spirit of their performance against Man City, where they took the game to a team that's better than them. I hope Liverpool summon the spirit of past the first 10 minutes against Tottenham, when we utterly took the game to Tottenham and tore them apart, really. We're unlucky not to be leading at half-time in that game, but we'll see.
Prediction?
I think Liverpool will go through, and in normal time.
Ian?
Same here. 2-0.
Mike?
I fancy it'll be 2-1. I think I feel Arsenal will try and have more of a go than what they obviously could at Anfield with the red card. But I do fancy now. We sort of seem to have got that little mental block out the way from the Thursday the week before, and we'll go as close to as what we played yesterday, and hopefully take the chances.
Okay, I think we're in for extra time, personally. Thank you very much indeed to Rob Gutman, to Ian Salmon, to Mike Kearney, Andy Heaton for producing. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week. Liverpool just found their way towards grinding one out against Brentford, and the nature of this Liverpool team is that it's ground-out victories at home, are 3-0s, not 2-0s or 1-0. See you later.
Mr. Wonderful here. When it comes to small businesses, I don't BS around. Why? Because I invest my own money, and I go to work to create shareholder value. Today, cash is king because it's really hard to get. But I have good news. If you had W-2 employees during the 2020 and 2021 pandemic, you could qualify for a cash payment of up to $26,000 per employee under the government's Employee Retention Credit Program, even if you received a PPP loan. Qualification is difficult, but my expert live team at WonderTrust.com offers white glove service to guide you through the process, and you won't pay anything until you receive your ERC check. They have helped thousands of businesses successfully qualify for the ERC program to receive cash refunds. To book an appointment, go to WonderTrust.com. That's WonderTrust.com. WonderTrust.com is survival capital in tough times. That's WonderTrust.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.